Hello and welcome to Matchsticks and Microphones. This is episode 16 for November 9th, 2011. I'm your host, Justin Azevedo. With me this evening, Ryan.
Oh, hi. I'm Ryan Lambert from Puck Daddy and Backhand Shelf and sometimes Flames Nation and sometimes other sites too. And that's it.
Eric.
I'm Eric Knapp. I'm one of the site managers for Matchsticks and Gasoline. Formerly ran the Fourth Line blog, and I live in Puerto Rico.
Whoa.
And I'm
someone's face.
Jesus Christ.
And I'm Mike from Hit the Post on rare occasions, and that's hitthepost.ca.
So we're just going to talk a little bit about the Flames thus far. We're 13 or 14 games into the season, and the results have been less than stellar, I think. Or I guess, depending on what you thought of the Flames coming into the season, they might be exactly on line with what you expected. So does anybody have anything that stands out to them right away this season in terms of performance, positive or negative, of any singular player?
Didn't think it was possible going into the season, but Babchuk has managed to actually do worse than expectations. Significantly.
He was the cause of the first goal last night, winning off a skate.
And he's now conveniently injured, isn't he?
I know, it's amazing how that works out, huh? But I think it's amazing just how bad he is. He is probably by far the worst player on the team.
$2.5 million, right?
Yep.
And that sounds right. $255, maybe even.
And no trade clause as well.
No trade clause.
Yep.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, he's on the Flames. Of course, he gets one of those.
So super fun with him. I think we should start a countdown on the side, Eric, of when he gets demoted or traded or bought out. I think that will probably be by July 1st. He will no longer be on the Flames, or you know, at least we can hope. I've kind of come around on Chris Butler a little bit. Earlier in the season, I was basically his mortal enemy, but lately he's been a little bit more solid, and apparently his underlying numbers backed it up, right, Eric?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's right up there with Jay Bomeister, his defensive partner. Jay Bomeister is one of the main reasons he's doing so well, but you know, he's not dragging J-Bo down. You know, he's not a hindrance to that pairing. He's able to keep up, which is really all you can ask for. I mean, basically a second defenseman is what he is playing.
Ryan?
I feel that he's been just fine. I haven't been like blown away by him or anything. Well, maybe relative to expectations, he's playing better just because I thought he wasn't going to be that good. He wasn't that good in Buffalo, but I think Eric's right when he says that J-Bo is certainly helping him to look better than he probably really is, but so far it's working, so you can't really rock the boat given how bad most of the team has been, I think.
You know what? I think the team's really bad, too. I'm just drinking beer here, really. Like, I don't have much else to add to that conversation.
I think that's a reasonable reaction to this team's season so far.
Yeah, I'm mostly just going to get blind drunk at the games if possible.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, the team has not been playing good hockey, and even when they do, I think they've played maybe three solid good games this year, and they've lost two of them. So, like, what the fuck? Like, it's like the only game they have played and they deserve to win, but they have won, is that game against Detroit. I mean, like, they played a full 60-minute game, and they completely beat Detroit in pretty much every area, and they won.
It's because they put Iginla and Jokinen together.
And then took them apart for the next game, which is really strange, but, I mean, that's another thing. How stupid is Brent Sutter? Like, I don't think I've liked anything that he's done so far this year. Like, sure, there's my little things like, you know, putting the fourth line out on a double icing, stupid stuff like that. But then you look at just like the overall team, and you know where we were at last year at this time was, you know, it kind of looked like he was almost trying to line match with the Jokinen, getting the tough minutes, getting buried in the defensive zone, and again, like kind of getting the softer minutes. But now he's completely gone away from that, and that's really confusing, I guess.
Yeah, I think that probably a lot of people were willing to give him a pass based on, you know, whatever last year you want to say. Like, he hasn't exactly been handed a good team, and you know, people were just like, okay, well, I mean, team sucks, so he, you know, he can only do so much, but the team still sucks, and like, he's gotten worse at his job.
Yeah.
Also, like, he is now actively a detriment to the team as opposed to, you know, a person who helps or at least doesn't hurt them. Like, he got out of their way last year and hasn't done that even in the slightest so far this year.
Eric?
Yeah, I mean, it's like Brent Sutter is playing with the team he wishes he has, not the team he has, and that's not really an effective way to coach. And you basically have – you can't not shelter Jerome McGill out of the game. You have to shelter them. That's just the players they are at this point in their career. And yeah, that's fine. But if you're not going to use them that way, then, well, you're an idiot. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's not effective.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when Backlund comes back. And I don't mean to paint Backlund as the savior of the franchise, but I think that if Backlund comes back and is immediately inserted into that top line with Tanguy and Ginland, then we start to see, I don't know, maybe a little bit softer minute-wise. Maybe I'll eat my words and I'll say I'm completely wrong about Brent Sutter, but I just don't foresee that happening. I think that he comes back and then he puts those guys against top competition.
Well, but so which line would you put against top competition out of this team?
Jokinen, Moss, Glencross.
Yep.
That's not even close.
But I mean, wouldn't they? Maybe they can hold their own some of the time, but they're still going to get beat by the better teams.
Ginla's going to get beat worse though. So you put the best line that you have against them.
Yeah.
The Flames are not in a good situation in terms of tough minutes, guys. And trading away their best tough minute centerman. I mean, Stepniak has done pretty well, but
he's not a centerman.
Exactly.
He's a wing.
He doesn't have the effectiveness that Lankow would have had or is probably having right now in Phoenix. So
he's decent in Phoenix. I've watched a couple of their games, and like he's not a revelation or anything. He's fine.
Honestly, it's probably going to be an unpopular opinion, and I'll probably write out this at some point, but I feel like when Backlund comes back, you should put Backlund Stepniak as the tough line or the tough minutes line, and you know figure out who a third forward would be on that line. But I feel like those two would make the most effective tough minutes line to free up the other players to create offense. I mean, as much as you would like to imagine that Backlund has skills to be an 80-point top line center, I really don't see him ending up that way. I feel like he has a much better two-way game, or rather the potential to have that two-way game than, to just generate offense. And I feel like it'd be a better use of both him, and it'd be better for the Flames as a whole to keep him in almost a Damon Lankow role from, a couple of years ago, and put him with Stempniak, who's been, just absolutely dominant in possession stats.
Well, I guess we can hope that Sutter makes the right choice. I doubt that he will, but like I said, we can hope. So another thing, I guess, so far this season has been the play of Mika Kiprusoff, and we are early, and as I said earlier, things may change, but his even strength save percentage is about .927, I think, right now, which is almost 15 whole points more than what it was last year. So he's been playing really well. Does anybody have any reasons why you think that is? Mike?
I don't know. Maybe he's cut down to half a pack a day. I don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what his even strength save percentage is for EV tied, but NHL or Hockey Analysis hasn't updated their stats for this year yet or this season yet. So I don't know what our Corsi tied is right now, and we can't really analyze because either on either direction, the Flames have either been winning for most of the games or losing for most of the games.
Yeah.
And that makes it, adds in score effects like the Minnesota game. Flames took like 40-something shots, but, the reason they took so many shots was because, they were down most of the game and were just kind of shooting whenever they had the puck, regardless of what a terrible shot they had. So, I mean, it might be entirely possible that Kiprusoff's performance is just a mirage. I'll say he's looked better out there than in previous years, but I also don't think he's, suddenly earning his contract again.
Yeah, that's no, not, I mean, it's been what, like, he's played what, like 15 games or something like that, not even. And, goal, look at Nikolai Habibulin. That doesn't all of a sudden make that contract good just because he started out in with a good October. You know what I mean? And I'm not ready to sit here and say, Kiprusoff is finally carrying the water again just because he's had one good month. Granted, it was a very good month, but at the same time, how long are you going to, I don't know, perpetuate this myth that, like, Kiprusoff is somehow still an even top 15 goalie in the league?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I've been saying that for about 6 months now, but apparently, like, every time somebody talks about elite goaltenders, his name is always brought up. Like, even Chris Pronger a couple weeks ago you know, they're asking, oh, you know, how hard is it to play against elite goaltenders? And he named Lundqvist and Kiprusoff and a couple other guys. And it's just like, this guy, for the past five seasons, has not played like an elite goaltender. I don't know why this perception is still, like, I guess,
well,
the only reason.
Well, it's people from Pronger, because he hasn't been, you know, in the Western Conference for a few years now. And last time he was there, he was still one, well, the perception, it was a readily available perception that he's still a top goaltender in that conference, you know.
I mean, I guess it could just be the fact that he plays 70 games a year and is extremely durable, and the people just kind of, you know, extrapolate that to, oh, since he plays so much, it must be the team's fault that they're losing. I don't understand the logic of that, but whatever. So moving on of old superstars, I guess, is Jerome Iginla. He's been playing like shit, to put it bluntly. Has not been able to carry play whatsoever. Plays die on a stick even more than usual. Looks like he can barely stick handle out there anymore, which is highly depressing. Nobody still thinks that this is still hangover from a lack of training camp, right?
No, I can't imagine that. I mean, he's got points. He only has 8 points or whatever it is, and almost all of them have come in two games. Like, he had the 3-point night against Detroit last week, and then didn't he have like 2 points against the Rangers? And so that's 5 of his points right there in two games. And only one of which Calgary won, by the way. Not that that really matters, I guess. But and then, I don't know. I just feel like you never see him score goals anymore. You know what I mean? Like, he scored 2 against Detroit. He scored in that game against the, like, did he score at any other point this season? I honestly don't remember.
I think
he had 3 points against Detroit. He had 1 against Colorado. Hold on. I'm pulling up the rest of the game log. So, yeah, 3 against Detroit, 1 against Colorado, 1 against Colorado again. Yeah, one each of Colorado games. And, yeah, 2 against the Rangers and 1 against St. Louis.
Was that the goal then, the St. Louis game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even remember that happening, but I believe it.
Well, how long has it been since you see him streak in the wing and just blast one from the circle and catch a corner? Like, he used to do that kind of thing all the time. He used to be really, like, amazingly talented. You see it happen all the time.
And I mean, I don't know why he's not doing that. Obviously, the fact that he is getting older, he is getting slower, and you can kind of tell that. I mean, I watch him pretty intensely when he's on the ice. And
so you're noticing that he brings a walker out with him on his shifts?
Well, not necessarily that, but it definitely takes him a lot longer to get up to top speed than it did even last year. Like, it takes him 5 or 6 steps, and in the NHL, you're just not going to have that much room, right? So, and then plus, I mean, there is a ton of defensive coverage on him even still now, especially because Sutter has not been matching lines, so he's playing against some of the top competition, which makes it even harder for him to do that. I mean, the guy's 34. You can't expect him to be doing that forever, right? And even maybe last year, the year before that, he should have stopped. But this is like it's gotten to a point now where it needs to stop if he's going to be productive whatsoever.
Here, I guess, then, is the question. And this was – I read this morning where – I think it was Eric Francis, shock of shocks, came up, like, asked Ray Bourque, like, what do you think, like, should Jerome Iginla ask out of town to go win a Stanley Cup somewhere? And Ray Bourque, because he's Ray Bourque, said, yeah, whatever, you can totally do that. It'll be great, and they'll have a parade for him when he wins one, probably, if history is any indicator. And I don't know, I haven't really talked to any other Calgary fans about this. Like, what do you guys think of a thing like that happening?
See, I think the thought around Flame Circles for a long time is that, you know, like, is that he's gonna have to be traded to win a Stanley Cup. For as much as he's meant to the franchise and the city, I mean, he was essentially single-handedly the reason the Flames stayed in Calgary after 2000 or 2001. I would rather him go somewhere else and win a Stanley Cup and get a shitty return than him will have stay here the rest of his career. I mean, there's very few players that you can have that kind of emotional attachment with. I think he's one of them. So, I mean, obviously I would hope that they'd be able to get something relatively good for him, but I could see it just based on his salary and his declining play that it wouldn't necessarily be something good. So, and I'm fearful that if that's the case, they'll hold on to him until his contract's done and then won't get anything at all for him. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's the concern, right? But at the same time, like, how soon do you do it, I guess, is the question, because people still think of him as, you know, Jerome Iginla. They don't think of him as old Jerome Iginla. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people probably aren't watching too many Flames games, like on TV or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, to an extent, obviously, your pro scouting department and all that is going to look at that. But perception still obviously plays a big factor in scouting. And I feel like if you... I feel like people probably go in watching Flames games expecting to see Jerome Iginla do good things, and therefore they see him do that. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I just feel like it'll all come together. If they want to trade him, I think there's probably a market there as long as they do it soon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think especially in the Eastern Conference where, you know, teams are, you know, they're going to see even less of him than a lot of other teams. You know, they're going to see less of his play. They're going to look at the roster and be like, oh, he's not doing well because he's got a, you know, shitty team. You know, and, you know, those two things, you know, combined with, you know, the, you know, once every, you know, 5 nights where he decides that he, you know, cares and wants to win a hockey game, you know, will probably convince the team, you know, to give up a decent return if the Flames do decide to trade him. But on the other hand, I feel like, you know, the fans rules that we kind of reside in are, you know, like on Twitter and the internet, it tends to be a little bit more intellectual and less diehard fan, you know, sort of people that the, you know, the Flames Twitter account retweets. I feel like, you know, those people are going to respond with like a, you know, basically they're going to respond with pitchforks and torches outside Jay Feaster's house, you know, if he goes, unless, you know, they basically, you know, go out and be like, Jerome Iginla asked to be traded. We're doing what he asked because we respect him. I mean, because he's such an icon. He's so entrenched with the Calgary Flames and the identity there. Like, the entire concept of, like, the Calgary fans about Jerome Iginla, like, despite the fact that I've been talking about trading him for over a year now, is even foreign to me. Like, I can barely picture what the Flames would look like without him.
I can't, like, someone asked me the other day, like, who would you want to see him traded to? And it's like, I can't even picture a scenario in which he has a jersey on that doesn't have, like, a big C on the front of it.
Exactly.
It's crazy to think about.
I mean, like, I have been watching Flames games essentially since I was 3 or 4 years old, and that was his rookie year. Like, every single Flames team I've ever seen has had him on it. It's like, how does the team exist without him being there? Like, it's just weird. Like, even that we're just talking about this, it's weird. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens the next 15 or 20 games, see if the team goes on a percentages run and Feaster decides to try and bulk up at the trade deadline or whatever to try and make the playoffs again. But
I don't think it seems even good enough for a percentages run. I honestly don't.
Yeah.
I mean, years past, they were mediocre enough that, like, you could have your percentages go either way. This team is, like, even when they have good percentages, they still suck.
So what's the cutoff? Like, at what point do you decide, okay, we're not really going to the playoffs, so it's time for, you know, restructuring? Like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm there, but, I mean, when do they give up on the press, right? Like, on trying to spin it to say that, yeah, we're still going for the cup? 20 games?
I would say that it probably follows a similar timeline to last year.
It's, you know, around Thanksgiving is when teams start really, like, kicking the tires on that kind of stuff. Like, after American Thanksgiving, I should say, which is, like, the last week of November. That's usually about when teams get really serious about all that kind of stuff, so...
So Backlund,
I figure it'll probably be around then.
So Backlund's going to come back. We're going to, like, I don't know, have a little bit of a run of, like, a couple of wins. And the next thing you know, we're going to be delayed until spring.
If they're the same position as they were. Right. If they were in the same position as they were last December 23rd, before that game in Dallas, I think instead of firing Feaster, something else, the Sutter firing is kind of, you know, mirrored to something else big will happen essentially around that date is what I'm trying to say, but I can't say because I'm a complete idiot, can't get out my fucking mouth. I think they I'm still holding out hope a little bit because I'm completely delusional and an idiot.
Okay, I can, but I know that I can shut out hope, all your hope I can erase it like instantly.
Do it.
Pierre-Luc Letourneau LeBlanc.
It's only fifth rounder. Fifth rounders don't really turn into anything.
No, but why have him? Why is he even there?
Same mentality that enforcers all around the league are employed.
How many
it's
times?
Not just a Calgary Center thing.
How many times has he dressed? Has he had any fights?
He's played three or four games this season.
Yeah.
Did he have any fights yet?
I think he's got one fight.
That's a hell of a question. I think one, probably. One or two.
I missed it. I must have missed it because, yeah, he's like a total, like, I don't know. Our organization, man, these guys, they're not really.
Well, then let me reverse it. What, the fact that he hasn't been playing, I mean, that's a good thing that the coaching staff kind of gets it.
Well, I don't know. To dress him at all seems like to trade a fifth rounder or whatever they gave away for him. Bring him on side and then, like, put him out there for three or four games, maybe to fight, maybe to, like, sit on the bench. Like, I don't know. It seems like a waste of time.
This franchise has had many wastes of times over the year. I would say, as much as I dislike the fact that he's on the team, I would say that he's probably one of the least impactful wastes of times in a negative way.
Yeah.
So, I don't.
You mean he's no Babchuk?
Exactly. He's not bad enough to completely fuck up the team. At least was on the other. But I think it is amazing that last night the team was, I think, plus 24 in Corsi, and he was somehow negative. I think he was minus one. Of course, okay. The only player on the team.
Okay, so you still have a tiny little shred of hope.
Yeah.
So I'm going to shut that down now. Our power play.
It's second in the league on the away. So obviously they know how to score somehow. Oh, who do we lose?
Is it second in the league in percentage? Because percentage isn't really a good indicator since it can fluctuate wildly. Or is it second in the league in shots taken? I'm not sure. I haven't checked.
I think it's percentage.
Hello?
Hey.
Yeah.
Hi. Hello.
Yeah, so we lost you there for a second, but you're back now.
Okay.
So Eric was just asking if the power play was percentage second in the league or shots taken second in the league. And I said percentage or second in the league right now. But they scored 6 goals and 18 attempts on the road. So.
Yeah, that's a really small sample size you're looking at there.
Yeah, it's early. I understand.
It's totally unsustainable.
Of course. But I think that a 2-for-34 is also wildly unsustainable as well. So.
Well, I think beyond ratios, you just watch them out there and they're just – it's like dysfunctional.
Well, see, it's so weird because like when you watch them on the road, they're able to gain zone entry. They're able to control the puck. But at home, they seem to just forget that. Like that's the big thing is the fact that they can't get into the zone right now at home. But somehow they're able to do it on the road. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me why they can't replicate that on both home and road. And, I mean, if they can do what they do on the road at home, I think they probably will be fine in the long run. And, I mean, fine is a relative term. But it will improve at home. Probably go down on the road because, as Ryan said, 33% is not going to be close to sustainable. But so would you like to still keep trying to...
No. Apparently hope springs eternal from the youth on the line here.
I think that'll last me another 15 or 20 games, that little sliver hope. But after that, it's fucking done. Like, I don't know.
I could shut it down, but it'd probably involve talking about your success with ladies.
Well, that has nothing to do with the Flames. That's just depressing in another way.
Oh, well.
I don't get it. But, okay, we'll move on. Unless you really want to talk about my personal life on the podcast.
Which, no.
Yeah, didn't think so. So, I guess, unless anybody else has anything to complain about the Flames so far this season, we can move on?
Scott Hahn. Let's complain about Scott Hahn for
okay.
a brief moment.
Go ahead.
Admittedly, I was one of the people that defended the acquisition of Scott Hahn. You know, he's got dirt cheap contract. He had okay play last year. And I didn't mind the acquisition of him. I thought I didn't fear he's like actually replace Regier's quality of play, but I figured he could replace some of that physical presence. And he would be, you keep his head above water, but holy shit, he has been not so good. Well, and he doesn't make like Corey Sarish mistakes where you like everybody that's watching the game sees it, and everybody that isn't even like near the game knows that Corey Sarish made a mistake. You know, it's just little things that he just keeps. Oh yeah, I was saying this in the comments on one of my posts about some of the underlying numbers. It's just like he's just not fast enough at the NHL level anymore. He's always just like one or two steps behind, and he just misses so many things. And it doesn't look painful, but it ends up hurting the Flames a lot. And he's eating up minutes, too, and it's not a good thing.
See, I still think that it's a good acquisition because it didn't cost the team a lot of money, and who else would you be having play that four position? Excuse me.
That's right.
Like, would you rather have...
I think in a vacuum, that was a good acquisition, but I don't think he's a good player.
Well, sure. I mean, but the struggles that he's had, Giordano's also had this season, and we all love Giordano immensely. So, I mean, how much of that is because he has to carry around Hannon? I wouldn't say all of it. I would say that probably.
I'd say a good part of it, though.
But he's still, Giordano's still contributing to the, his own struggles. It's the same thing with Butler. Butler's been playing with Bomeister. Bomeister's helped him, but he hasn't helped him 100%. It's this opposite with Giordano and Hannon. So, I don't know what the extent percentage breakdown is, but then, I mean, how much of it is because they've been playing behind Aginla's line? I mean, Aginla's line has been terrible. Aginla has been terrible. Have they carried the load the entire time? And that's why their numbers look so bad? Like, if they were behind Jokinen's line or Stepniak's line or whatever, would they be negative relative Corsi players? I doubt it. But that's just conjecture at this point, so. Anybody else?
I think we're done with the Flames. Let's talk about Wild fans for a brief moment.
Sure. So, I don't know what that was, but it sounded delicious, like a bag of chips opening.
It's Doritos.
Maybe it's one of those new Sun Chips bags. Wild fans. So, I just love that Wild fans, much like Colorado fans, whenever something goes even a little bit wrong, they're out to defend themselves against the whole world. Everything ever is against Wild fans. I mean, like with the headbutt call last night. Sure, I mean, probably didn't warrant a 5-minute play, but the entire Twitterverse completely erupted of the, like, especially Brian Reynolds, and I know that he's, or is that his name, Brian Reynolds?
Yeah,
he's a complete moron. I don't care if he hears this or not. Probably won't, because he doesn't listen to good quality shit. But he's a complete moron, and the way that he reacted last night was not becoming of anybody with that is attempting to be professional. Like,
oh yeah,
going on Twitter and
admittedly I poked the bear a little bit last night, but it started. You know, he starts. You know, what a terrible call! That rep needs to be talked to by the league. It's just so aggravating. How can you now just like reach out with a stick and start poking that bear?
Like, it's. Go ahead, Ryan.
I think that, as with a lot of fan bases, like, the extreme homerism comes from their television broadcasts, I think. And, you know, like, the Red Wings have just, I don't know if you've ever seen a Red Wings broadcast, but it is fucking insufferable. And the Wild is the same way. Like, the second that happened, the whole headbutt thing, they were like, well, to be fair, it might have been a headbutt, but I mean, Aginla's wearing a visor, so, you know, whatever. And it's like, really?
It's just insane. Like, I guess we can move on to the homerism. Excuse me, guys like Red Wings fans if you want, but the reaction that some minor things incur among some fans is just absolutely stunning to me. It's like, how can you care that much? Like, I obviously care a lot about the Flames, but I don't give that much of a shit to go on Twitter and explode and say that the Flames are buying off the rest because of a 5-minute power play. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, any time that you enter into a discussion about whether a rep is out to get a team and it just happens to be the team that you like. Well, first of all, if the perception is that a rep is out to get your team, your perception is fucking wrong, because they don't care. They honestly don't. Like, the closest thing I've ever seen is that Alex Burrows thing, and even that is very, let's say, dubious.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, you know, I've talked to guys that, and granted, not like NHL refs, but I've talked to guys that are like college refs or whatever, and they don't give a shit who wins or loses, really. They don't. And so for people to be like, well, the refs are out to get the most that refs are, is they're like aware of a team's reputation, and maybe they're looking for infractions a little bit more based on that. Like, if they're going into the game going, these guys commit a lot of tripping penalties or whatever, and they see something that's like a borderline trip, maybe they call it just because that's in their brains. But overall, there's never anybody lining up like that to just go, we're gonna go out there and we're gonna call a bunch of bullshit offside calls. And anytime there's even the slightest chance that something was roughing, we're going to send them to the box. It's like, that doesn't fucking happen. Grow up.
No.
Actually, I'd like to point out, like, even, like, it's one thing for, you know, like, the fan bloggers to, like, get all pissy about it, but, like, even Michael Russo, who writes for the...
The Trib?
Yeah, he writes for the Trib. This is what he said last night. Maybe LaRue and Cole should let Iginla officiate the third period since they're letting him call majors and game misconducts now.
Whatever.
Really? I mean, it's just embarrassing.
Yeah. He's a member of a professional hockey writers association, and he writes for a newspaper with probably 100,000 people circulation. Yet
there's no way it's that big, but okay.
Well, sorry, a large circulation.
Yes. Okay.
And he's going out and just saying this shit. It's absolutely amazing to me that people just allow this stuff to happen unchecked. But whatever. The Wild fans, bitchy. Avalanche fans, bitchy. Detroit fans, racist people and homophobic.
You can't say that, I was told.
Oh, I can't? Oh,
no, you cannot, even though that guy that threw the banana at Wayne Simmons turned out to be a Red Wings fan, you can't just say that Red Wings fans are racist.
Oh, well.
I was told.
Well, certain Red Wings fans, racist, especially that chief guy from Able to Yezerman.
He's homophobic.
That guy is got to be the biggest douchebag on the face of the earth.
Who's this? I'm sorry, I zoned out for a second.
Chief? From...
Fuck that guy.
Fuck. What an asshole. I hate
that guy so much.
Same. And I don't want this to turn into a dick-sucking episode of the podcast, Ryan, but I love the trolling that you do of Red Wings fans. It's fucking amazing.
Thank you.
I just don't understand why people can't get that you're playing a role here. But
well, to be fair, I do legitimately hate Red Wings fans. I have nothing against the team except that I like to see them lose because I know it makes their fans upset. the team, if they existed in a vacuum, I would really like them, especially if their broadcast team did not call those games. And it's just the fact that I know that every time Tomas Holmstrom bumps into a goalie, they're like, yeah, get him, Homer. And I'm like, hate him so much.
Yep, Tomas Holmstrom, he of the ass-sweating goaltenders' jerseys. I probably hate him more than any other player on the Red Wings.
No, I hate Cronwall more.
That guy, yeah, that guy with the neon knees and the jumping hits. Those are pretty douchebaggy as well.
Yeah, he tries to hurt people, so fuck him.
He's like a less obvious Matt Cook.
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it. And because he's European, people give him the benefit of the doubt, especially Red Wings fans.
It's because he's on the Red Wings. That's why people give him the
benefit of the doubt. If he was any other team, they'd tear him a new one. But as a Red Wing, he is untouchable.
Of course, because it's the most storied franchise in the history of hockey. I mean, except for the Montreal Canadiens, but most of them completely overlooked that fact, which I think is hilarious. Well,
that's mostly because Canadiens fans are probably the second worst fan base in the NHL.
I would say in terms of fan bases I hate, I think Detroit would be number one and Colorado would be number two. Just because Colorado, you look really entertained over there, Mike. just because Colorado, their attempt at mocking of us knows no bounds. And when I say us, I mean Flames fans. And yet, we always seem to win, which is amazing. And when I say we, Ryan, I'm not talking about the team because I know that you hate that. I mean Flames fans.
I do hate that.
How can you explain to me why?
Because you're not on the fucking team. So... if you say we, you are tying yourselves to the accomplishment of people who have never met you and don't know who you are. And it's I'll put it this way. Let's say that you really like McDonald's and then McDonald's sells a million Big Macs and they sell more burgers than Burger King. And you're like, we did it, McDonald's. What? That doesn't make any sense.
Okay, that's fair. So what about a university team? If the money that I pay for tuition directly goes to the team's existence.
Well, no, because if you're going to get into that, it's if you buy tickets to a Flames game, you should get a championship ring. Flames are going to win a championship. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever said.
Because you own a jersey? Good job. You're awesome.
High fives.
You're on the team.
And with the university, it's a little different, too, because you're part of the same community as the players. Okay.
I think the we thing should stay out of it. Unless you are paid by the team or on it, in the case of a university, don't say we. It's dumb.
Well, because with the university, I feel maybe it's because I went to a really small one. I went to a high school that was bigger than my university. I'll put it that way.
Jesus.
My university was honestly 3,800 students. So it was it was never the feeling of like, oh, the team won. It was like the school won, you know, because it wasn't about the team winning. It was about the school winning. And I feel like that's a very different identity than the concept of like a professional sports team where like I have no real connection with the community in Calgary. I've never fucking been to like Western Canada, you know. The closest I've been is like Seattle. I think I might have been to Wyoming when I was like two or something. So I think it's a very different dynamic, and you can't really compare the two. It's apples and pineapples.
Apples and pineapples. That's the first time I've ever heard that said.
I feel like it was a little more appropriate because they sound similar, but they're not the same. Whereas apples and oranges don't even sound similar.
Okay, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Fair enough.
But going back to why I feel like the Montreal Canadiens are one of the worst fan bases, I really just want to hammer this point home. when Calgary's linked to like a rumor, you know, like we get a little interested in it, and we're like, you know, like even just like the Flames are, you know, contemplating a move, we're like, oh, okay, let's, you know, it'd be disingenuous to say that we weren't like interested and, you know, curious as to who it was, but we also don't run away and say, holy shit, Flames are trading for Sidney Crosby every time, or, you know, Flames are trading for Vinny LeCavalier every time, because it's stupid.
Wait, the Flames are trading for Vinny LeCavalier? This is the greatest day of my life.
Like, he's going to replace Gimla.
Montreal was like, what was that, 3 weeks ago or something like that, or 2 weeks ago, not maybe, when they were really struggling, like, I mean, they're not really doing a whole lot better now, but, and they were like, you know, there's a move coming to... You know, it started off with like, oh, the Canadiens are making a move. Okay. You know, you generally, like at this point in the season, it's not going to be a major move. It's going to be like depth player for depth player. That's normal. That's what everyone should expect. That's what I would expect if, you know, someone said that about the Flames right now. But instead, with the Canadiens, you get this whole, it starts out, you know, it starts with Canadiens are making a move to, Canadiens are making a move to improve the team to, Canadiens are making a significant move to improve the team to, Canadiens are acquiring Vinny LeCavalier for Scott Gomez and the seventh rounder.
Yeah, no, like the media there is like HF boards.
Yeah, and it's the fans crazy. Encourage it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, well, look, you can't sit here and go, you know, who's dumb is sports fans, because yeah, of course, like that, like you can't go like say that accusatorially. You can say that they are dumb. You can't be like, yeah, but the problem with you guys is that you're dumb. It's like, well, yeah, obviously.
See, Eric, I thought you were going to go a completely different direction there. You know, when Vancouver riots, everybody freaks out about it. But Montreal's allowed to riot, like, once, maybe twice a year. It's just kind of accepted at this point. Oh, Montreal's going to riot. Ah, they're all crazy. Whatever. Let them have it. Ah, who cares if they're giving... Who gives a shit they're burning police cars? That's fun. It's just fun. All in good fun, you know?
Well, that's because that whole city is falling apart anyways.
It is.
Plus, they have that rich tradition, you know?
going all the way back to 1955 or whatever.
That's right.
They got to do it.
How are you going to rob that of them? You know what I mean? You can't rob them of that, I should say.
True.
It's racist, you know, if you do.
I'd honestly not be surprised if we like found out in like 10 years that they've been buying like old junk cars and painting them with police colors every time the playoffs come around.
That would be amazing.
Okay, guys.
Eric, me and you, let's go start a business in Montreal. where we just paint cars to look like police cars and then sell them at riots.
That would be a money. That'd be money right there. I mean,
it's really not a sustainable business model.
That was a jumble of two people talking there.
Sorry, everyone.
Ryan, you go first.
I'll leave now. No, I was just saying it's not a sustainable business model, I guess. I mean, you're really only going to make money one day a year. And the rest you're just painting cars.
Well, but imagine how much those police cars cost. Like probably like
it'd be 50. 80, 90 bucks, probably. Well, Canadian.
Yeah, that's a good point. Eric, you were saying?
I was actually totally proud of what I was saying. Never mind.
Okay.
Something about police cars.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I like police cars. They make fun noises and colors.
Wee-wee-wee. Anybody else have anything to talk about?
Mildly entertained by the Penn State riot right now.
There's actually a riot happening?
Yep.
Yes. That is what the tweets say.
Oh, that's good. That's
well,
really
hey,
good.
To be fair, they only fired an elderly person like some 15 years after he found out about a bunch of child rapes. But, you know, hey, here nor there.
Yep. I mean, that's completely absurd that they would do that. absolutely ridiculous. Because raping kids, that's something that has become socially acceptable. So
I don't think it has.
Really? This is news to me. You're rocking my world.
I'm going to take issue with you on that.
You know, I knew Canada was a little backwards, but I didn't realize it was this backwards.
Well, shit. My entire worldview has just been destroyed.
We reserve our illicit sex for polar bears, actually.
Yeah. Their hair is quite soft and nice.
No, what's been really fascinating, though, is the language that's been used with this whole deal is just like, they don't say, like, rape scandal. They say sex scandal. Like, it's, he had an affair, like, that one.
Yes, with a series of young boys. He had several affairs over 15 years.
That he had some sort of, like, authoritative power over, right? Like, they were part of his charity or something?
I don't know that he had any, like, he wasn't, like, their teacher or anything like that, but he was certainly in a position where, like, he was a mentor or whatever you want to say, I think is what.
Yeah. I think he was, like, the coach of, like his little football development camps here.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah. I mean, he wasn't, like. Yeah, okay, yeah. He probably did have some amount of authority over them, at least in, like, their eyes. He didn't.
Yeah, like a teacher, yeah. Right? So.
Yeah, sure.
And I mean, just okay. The entire
thing. In a child's perception, it's like a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the entire thing is just completely fucked up. Like, so we have the child rapist. We have the graduate student who, instead of going to the police or calling social services saying, hey, I just saw a child get raped, he goes to a football coach. And the football coach tells the AD, once again, instead of going to the police, social services tells the AD. And then the AD just kind of, oh, well, whatever. Like, there's so much fucked up on every single one of those levels. I mean, the actual raping the child, obviously the highest part of it. But, like, it's just, it's completely.
I'm glad you said that.
I just wanted to clarify, of course.
What the actual part of it
was. But it's just like, what the fuck?
I'm expecting some heavy editing later.
No, this is all staying in.
Okay.
I mean, we're just talking now. It's fine.
I'm yeah, yep.
I mean, like, it's fucking, the entire thing is just fucking insane. I can't.
The issue is this, that there's so little to say about the flames apart from
they're not very
whatever.
Good.
It ranges from boring to upset, and it's hard to stay too upset for too long, really.
Well, exactly, because we know how bad the team is. It's like, oh, fuck, the team's bad, even though I knew they were gonna be bad. Yeah. God fucking damn it, this sucks ass. You can only do that for about 30 seconds until it's like, well, shit.
And it's like, they're bad, but they're not even like Edmonton, like, it's like, they're bad, but it's just kind of, they slid down here. It wasn't like through Edmonton levels of mismanagement that they're, you know, down at this point. They're just not very good anymore.
I mean, at least we could have had fun with that. We could have bitched about everything that way. Now it's just like, well, they're old, so I guess they kind of are expected to get worse. And the GM's not really doing anything. And the moves that he's making are kind of okay, but kind of not. It's very. Like if it was possible to personify ambivalence in a sports team, I think the Calgary Flames would probably be what you get from it. But I don't know. Anyways, actually, wait, one more thing before we go. The Ryan talked about the Washington Nationals catcher that got kidnapped before we started the podcast. That is fucking weird. Like, you said his name was Wilson Ramos, right, Ryan?
Well, yes, that is all correct. That's what happened.
So apparently he goes down to Venezuela to play. I'm not sure if you heard about this, Eric, but he goes down to Venezuela to play like 10 games with his team or whatever, his local team, and just gets kidnapped. He's like, oh, well, shit, now he's kidnapped. It's like, what?
To be honest, this isn't actually, I mean, it's surprising in some respects, but the fact is this happens a lot more than people realize in basically developing countries. He's developing it. It's, you know, basically not third world, but also not first world countries. It happens in Dom Rep a shit ton. It happens in Peru. It happens in Colombia. It happens in Venezuela. The fact is, basically, it just happened to be someone in the sports world that happened to. There's a, for a long time, like Puerto Rico is basically an hour ferry ride away from, like 3 hours, I think, from Dom Rep. Like, I could go to Dom Rep really quickly. Come back, but there's about 10 years where like we're like they would ban us from going there, and then they'd lift the ban, and then someone else would go there to like go to a like a all you can or an all-inclusive resort, and they get kidnapped like the month after the ban was lifted. And like I'm just, like sitting here waiting for like someone to get kidnapped in Dom, like a someone in the Coast Guard or Navy to get kidnapped in Dom Rep, and all of a sudden we're not allowed to go there anymore because it happens all the time. And it's like, you know, and we don't realize how how frequent this stuff happens, because when we, you know, when the people, like when people with money, basically, like all, like, you know, I'm certainly not a very rich person, but you know, relative to these developing countries, I have a pretty high income. You know, if I go to visit, generally, I'm just going to stay in like the big cities. You know, I'm going to go to, you know, Lima or something like that. But you know, if you go out of there, like this kid, you know, he's, you know, he's a catcher. He's obviously making a lot of money because, you know, he's, I don't know if he's actually a prospect or if he's actually made the roster or something.
Oh, he's he's excuse me, he's on the team. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he's making money, and you know, of course, he's going to get kidnapped going back to his hometown. You know, there's like, it's just the way the world is down there. It's sad, but I mean, I don't know. I can't say I was like, yep, someone else got kidnapped. Was wondering when that was going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, unless anybody else has anything to talk about, I think we're done for the night.
Okay.
You were very accepting of that. So I'd just like to thank Ryan and Eric and Mike for coming on. It's the first time in a while we've had one of these, and I had fun, so that was good. Ryan, what's your Twitter handle, and where can we find you on the web?
You can get me on at @2linepass, all the words, no numbers or anything like that. And you can find me on, well, you know what, just go to that, because I retweet everything that I write anyway, so deal with it, I guess.
Eric?
I'm on Twitter at @MG_ARIK, and yeah, I write at Matchsticks and Gasoline. Yeah, that's about it.
And I'm at hitthepost.ca, and you'll never see me there, but we have a Twitter handle at hitthepost.
And I run at Matchsticks and Gasoline. I'm on Twitter at AzevedoJ. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys later.